If he throws the ball to the wide receiver in the end zone, that's going to be a touchdown.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Dimebag Podcast. I am Tyler Wilkinson. We're joined today by Russ Steinberg.
Hello.
And Megan Bard.
Hello.
And Kevin Meacham.
How's it going?
Fine, thank you. And proud new papa, Alex Cohen. Long time no see, buddy. How you doing?
Hello.
I'm Alex, great.
Alex is a proud new father to Charlie, who was born at 6'10" and 375 pounds.
So my height.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was actually reading Justin
McBride's
measurements.
He's going to solve all of our front court issues. Yes.
We've already offered him a scholarship. So we're recording this on Monday night. The exhibition season is officially over, at least for the men, and the season begins in earnest this weekend, Friday night for the men, Saturday, I believe, for the women. So I don't know. Do you guys have any takeaways from the three men's exhibition games so far?
I feel like the exhibitions were, like, sort of contrary to each other. Like, the first one, I was like, oh, God, they've never played defense before. And then...
Are you talking about it?
Well, that one, I guess, and the defense looked terrible for like two games, and then actually in the third game against Queens College, particularly at the beginning of the game, it was like, okay, I see what you've done here, and I like it.
You said a three-word phrase in there that I think is probably key, which was against Queens College.
That's true, but
who might be the worst basketball team I've ever seen?
They were horrendous. But
they were running a press that they actually seemed to know how to do. They got the trap working early, and I don't know. I just feel like that's a thing that I trust Cavanelli to teach them, and at least some of them are listening. Like, Quint looked 80% less lost to where he should be on defense in that last game.
Yeah, the community college guys looked a lot better playing against community college players than they do against Providence. I will say, so it was encouraging at the very least just to see him jump out to such a big first half lead. It was 47-15 at the half. And then they immediately came out and started the second half and let Queens College go on a like 17-3 run. And I wanted to jump off my roof.
Yeah, UConn's really the only team that could make a 57-point win look bad.
Yeah, this is the like 35-point win that is still leaving me convinced they're going to lose to Colgate on Friday, something like
that. It was 100-43. UConn thoroughly dominated that game. But Queens College also missed like a UConn amount of threes.
Yeah.
Like, they were really, really bad. They missed
missed 33-pointers.
Yeah.
They were 9-39.
I really enjoyed the no escalators tweet. That was something of UConn is actually the fifth borough now.
They also had a ludicrous number of turnovers as well in that game. 28. Which is kind of a lot. That's kind of a lot.
Part of that can be attributed though to UConn's press, which, as you said, looked really good.
To what do we attribute?
It actually looked like they were playing with each other, which is nice.
To what do we attribute UConn's 20 turnovers?
To like Isaiah Whaley and probably a few to Mike Noyes and Christian Foxen.
Noyes had two.
Okay, how many did Whaley have with his five fouls?
Two. No, I'm sorry, only one turnover.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I'll shut up. Never mind.
They did manage to spread them out. Nobody had more than three.
There you go.
Consistency.
Yeah. I mean, considering the way they also started the second half, I imagine it was kind of a focus problem, which we also saw. Like, they just played in those first two games, as you said, Megan, they were just, like, lazy on defense. It wasn't only, like, you know, scheme. It was they were just not switching. They were letting guys go right past them. It's like, this team is not good enough to be lazy.
Giving up a 17-3 run to a terrible D2 team kind of shows that. And you kind of saw that last year, too, because they would occasionally have decent runs, and then they'd give it right back almost every game.
One thing I think that was encouraging was watching Cobb and, to an extent, Carlton as well show that they actually have like legit post moves, which is not something that I've really seen from a first year UConn big in a long time. And that's something that isn't really dependent on who you're playing against. So, I mean, that was good to see. And it makes me feel like maybe we have a couple of bigs who could be serviceable. I don't know. Maybe.
Even the other guys too, I thought they've shown glimpses, you know.
Polly's
like really athletic, a lot more than I was expecting.
Same.
And Diarra
looked good too in the limited time that he's had.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't know that any one of them is going to be able to sustain it. But I will say, I'm surprised that there's not a bigger talent drop off. I thought we would pretty clearly start seeing, you know, tiers of guys. And I'd probably like Cobb and Diarra on the first tier, and then somewhere at the bottom, Whaley and Polly. But we've kind of seen, like, if Cobb picks up some fouls and Whaley comes into the game, like, they're not losing a whole lot. Whaley doesn't have the post game that Cobb has, but he holds his own on the boards, and he's a net positive on the court, I think, which is a pleasant surprise.
I think it'll be interesting to see how all these different configurations of players end up, as because you've got, you know, we know they like three guard lineups, and I think it's been pretty clear that Christian Vital, even if he isn't starting, is one of the four best players on the team and probably should take like 90% of the 3-point shots. But
minimum,
depending on how they want to run it, you can go smaller and faster, you can go with more like traditional post players. I think it'll be interesting to see how he configures his lineup depending on what the matchups are and how he wants to play. Like, if he wants to go full court press, like with a Whaley and a Polly, that really helps you to play that kind of defense. But if you want to go a different direction, he has those options too. So I think that's another, like, it won't just be like foul dependent, though I'm sure that will be a factor. Yeah,
there will be games where that is the case.
But he actually also has the options of like run out very different lineups depending on what he wants it to look like.
How big is Whaley?
I want to say like 6'9".
6'9". I think they're all like,
oh yeah, they're all identical.
Just say 6'9".
But he like didn't maybe strike me as a typical sort of post player.
Whaley's 6'8", 190.
That was pretty close.
All
right. And like him and Larry and Polly, they can all sort of do the 3-4 thing. And
That's the impression I got from Whaley. And I guess Larrier's kind of like that too. I mean, maybe KO's strategy all along was to recruit 10 identical guys, and like two of them will be really good, and then he'll look like a genius. And then if there's a little bit of a drop off, that's okay.
I mean, considering what we've seen so far, though, which was like, I don't even remember who played well in the first game. Polly, I guess, was probably the standout of that group in the first game, and then Whaley in the second game, and Carlton in the third game. Like, go figure, it helps to fill your roster with basketball players. So that when four of your five are not
they
producing,
have basketball
you have a
players.
Fifth.
Yeah.
And even Quint, who obviously he's very raw. I love Quint, but he's very raw. But I think he's even like, in that last game, he seemed to have a better sense of like where he was supposed to be on the floor on defense. And man, if he can get that lob game working, he can jump straight up over people. It's kind of
impressive.
I don't
think he has a single dunk yet, does he?
He's had some like lay-ins.
He has lob, layups.
A couple of lob lay-ins, and I'm fine with that. I am fine with that game.
So what's your biggest concern? Is it the front court?
It's the UConn men's basketball team.
You know what? I don't think that is my biggest concern. I think my biggest concern is that this team can't shoot.
Yes, that's my biggest
concern. And if
you
can't shoot, you can't score points. And if you can't score points, you can't win.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to let us have 70 points worth of layups in most of the games that we play.
Yeah.
So,
Russ, that was very John Madden of you. Thank you.
Yeah, I think we need to pass a law that says Terry Larrier can no longer shoot a three.
Also, can we please change his name to Larry Terrier? Please.
Joe D has called him Terrier multiple times on each broadcast so far this season.
My autocorrect tries to change it to Lardier every time.
So also objectively, Larry is just a better name than Terry. It just is.
I'm with you on that one. Larry Terrier also sounds like a great dog name, so
like if I ever get a terrier, his name is gonna be Larry Terrier. And I don't care what kind of collegiate career Terry Larrier has. It doesn't matter.
No.
That dog is going to be Larry Terrier.
As it should be.
So it is freshman year at VCU, a game mind, or a
it's
year mind
the you. The University of VCU.
Sorry. Yes. Thank you, Tevin Mack. A year in which Larrier played, I'm trying to look at his minutes per game here, 18.5
not much.
Minutes
yeah,
per game.
That's a reasonable amount. That's
more
a,
than I thought.
That's a freshman amount.
He still attempted 3.5 three-pointers per game.
That's
he
too many.
26%.
Way too many.
In the four games last year before his knees turned to mashed potatoes, he took 3.3 three-pointers in those four games and shot 30.8%.
4-13.
And in the three exhibition games this year, he's 0-8. Stop yeah. shooting.
Yeah. And his two-point percentage through those three games is pretty great, though.
Yeah, he's struggling with Providence a little bit, but he's good at it. Really good in that Merrimack game. He was basically playing the four the entire time, and he was killing it.
I would like to see more of that. Though I'll admit, my biggest concern for this team is Terry Larrier's knees. So, because it feels like every time somebody's writing about him, they're like, and he's sitting out and has ice on his knees. And I'm like, that cannot be good. That
yeah,
cannot
he's
be
had
a good
ice
thing.
On his knees way too many times so far, mm-hmm. and they haven't even played a real game yet.
Like, this is not going to go well. No. Like, knees are awful. They're objectively the worst thing, and Terry Larrier's appears to be the actual worst knees in the world.
He had a breakaway dunk against Providence, and he came down, and he, like, landed, and he stopped for a second, and I thought, oh, no. Like, that's going to happen every time he does anything.
After the Providence game, I talked to him, like, in the hallway outside the locker room, and he had this gigantic ice pack on his knee, and I swear, I was just staring at it. I don't even know if I was making eye contact. Although I think Larrier's knee is probably the most important body part on this team, but I'm far more, I think the percentages would be higher of Gilbert's shoulders exploding, because that's happened multiple times in the past. And Jalen Adams is 1-9 on three-point attempts in the three games, by the way.
That doesn't concern me as much as how many free throws has he taken?
Well, he took 11 in the Providence, no, sorry, 12. He was 11-12 in the Providence game.
Which oh, okay. very nice.
Yeah, that was very good. He did not attempt one against Merrimack, and he was 2-2 against Queens.
Okay, yeah, but against a real team, he got to the line.
He's also, I think, much more aggressive so far this year. What I don't know about Jalen still is just if he, I don't know, either knows how or is willing to just completely take over a game, which is that was sort of like the last piece of the puzzle.
Yeah.
Interesting, because in my response to the preview, I said I thought that he was the most likely guy to like take over a game and say, nah, fuck it, we're not losing this game.
Well, I think that's true because he has the skill set to do that.
And he has the skill set, and he did do it a couple of times last year. I mean, and even in some games where they ultimately didn't make it, but like I think I remember against like Oregon and I think
Oklahoma
out in Maui
State is probably the one you were thinking of.
Oklahoma State, yeah. Against Oklahoma State, he took over that game in the second half and brought us damn close to winning that game.
And if I remember correctly, he was about to against Auburn before he had his brain scrambled.
And that he basically took over the Temple game. He ended up hitting the game winner on.
Yeah.
And he nearly took over the Cincy game, the four overtime game. As a freshman, he was great in that game.
Yeah, I think it's right to bring it up as a question, you know, is he going to be the guy who can do that on a regular basis this year? And I think he has the skill set too. I think you're right in bringing that up. But the question is this team good enough to get him in a position where he can say, fuck it, we're winning this game? Because it's never just one guy.
Yeah.
It's
and he does have the skill set. What worries me about it, though, is you know, Kemba especially, which this is such an unfair comparison for anyone, I guess, but if he did not have one thing going right, he was able to find another thing that's going right. And I just don't know that Jalen has that diversity in his game to be able to do that consistently.
It's like, also easy to forget with Kemba, though. Like we bring up Kemba and say he's an unfair comparison, but let's not forget that when Kemba won the title, a lot went wrong that season. There were a lot of losses.
And Kemba had that terrible stretch, in the middle of Big East play.
Yeah, what were we, 9-9 in the conference that season? Something like that?
Never forget the infamous UConn blog. post.
Oh, yeah. Well, what's the phrase, Meacham?
That guy sounds stupid. I believe it was a brief march in the offing. It's stupid.
No, but I'm just saying, like, you know, we say, oh, because we lionize Kemba Walker, and rightfully so, for what he accomplished. But, you know, it's also easy to forget that watching Kemba Walker wasn't always as awesome as it was for 11 games in March. These are still college basketball players. They all suck right now. I mean, college basketball as a whole sucks, and we've all acknowledged this. It's a lesser version of basketball as compared to some of the things that you can see around the world. Sometimes good shit happens and people string runs together. I mean, it's what happened in 2011, 2014. And I think, unfortunately, at our stage in UConn fandom, those are the kinds of things we have to hold on to and hope can happen.
I mean, there's certainly like a precedent for it, obviously, Kemba, Baz, and even like Boat to a degree as well. If he hadn't died against SMU, they could have won that game. Who knows what would have happened if he wasn't the literal ghost of Ryan Boatwright. But I think, I mean, the question is like, is Jalen going to have the kind of like junior season we've seen from those guards who did make big steps from sophomore to junior year? And I mean, it's possible. He doesn't actually play with, I don't know, like Boat and Kemba were both like, had that sort of like, fuck you, I'm going to win this game. Like
killer instinct,
fiery attitude. And I don't know, he's a much more sort of like laid back player. Mm-hmm. You know, he likes his Euro step, and he doesn't necessarily like make a ton of contact when he goes in the lane. So it's sort of like, it's sort of hard to make that direct comparison, but I'll sort of be interested to see if he, you know, if he can, because that's really the question is like, is he going to be the guy that when someone needs to win a game, someone needs to make some shots, and is he going to be that guy? And I don't know.
Just to bring this full circle, Kemba had two games in 2011 that he scored 15 points or less. Adams had 17 last year.
That's my big concern about Adams.
Yeah, it would be one thing if there was more scoring elsewhere on this roster. Like, Adams' assist numbers in those games were actually fine, but I bet UConn was pretty bad in them. They lost a lot more of them than they won. But you know what I mean? Like, they need him to be something that I don't really know if he's comfortable being.
My biggest thing with Jalen is he's obviously got the skills to be like that dominant point guard, but he's never been like the monster scorer that Kemba was, or even Shabazz was. Right. He doesn't shoot the ball well. His 2-point percentage is not high. His 3-point percentage is not high. He can improve on that. And I think this year, not having to take every shot, help him be more efficient. But he's definitely not the same kind of player as Kemba, because he doesn't have those, you know, 30-point game.
I think the thing that's clouding my judgment there is that I've seen him do that thing a couple times, and I'm just projecting that on what he's capable of doing. And he scored 15 points or fewer 17 times last season. That's the perfect illustration of the fact that this is a big question mark, and it is something worth wondering about and podcasting about.
I mean, Jalen had one 30-point game last year. It was that Oklahoma State.
In an ideal world, Adams wouldn't have to be that guy, because you have Vital who can shoot, and you have Larrier supposedly who's never going to take a three again and can like dominate from, you know, inside of 20 feet. But the fact of the matter is there are going to be games where Vital's shot isn't falling, or where the bigs get into foul trouble, or where Gilbert's shoulders are mashed potatoes, and you're going to need to turn somewhere. And those would be the games in the past where, like, Boat in the AAC tournament or Kemba or Shabazz would just take over.
So hopefully
night in, night out, you won't need Jalen to be doing that, but you know there are going to be games where that's going to be the case.
Is there any time left? Is there any way we could see if Aaron Judge has eligibility left to come back to UConn and
his alma mater, yes.
His alma mater and play some basketball.
Mm-hmm. Serious question. Put Aaron Judge on this roster right now, where does he fit in?
Seventh in the power rankings.
He and Quint would kill it on social media.
Oh yeah.
Should we talk about the women and how they're good?
Let's just talk about the women. They're so much better.
I listened to the first half in the car with my good friend Bob Joyce, who really, you know, I got to say, so we laud Joe D probably more than anyone because he's a treasure. Bob Joyce is no slouch.
Bob Joyce is good.
The UConn women play so fast. I feel like Bob Joyce is like half auctioneer.
No, he's really good at that. And you could tell he actually like puts in the prep to like do a good broadcast. And as somebody who does basketball broadcast, granted not for the UConn women's basketball team.
That is
really hard to do. To like be able to identify players you've never seen play before.
And never will again.
And never will again. Like that, to be able to spout off facts and other shit. Like there have been games that I've called for NYU. Granted, this was like in college and I was like hungover, where like I've gotten to the game and asked who they were playing. So like it kind of puts it into perspective the amount of prep work that Bob Joyce and Jody actually have to do. And I really respect it.
No, but in all seriousness, I am so in love with this team and they are a lot of fun. They're so much fun. And you can even see like Megan Walker and Azri Stevens are like, they're starting to get into the swing, but they're not quite at the speed that, you know, like Gino expects them to be, but they're almost there. Crystal is looking real sharp. She had like a sweep behind the back pass.
That was nice.
Yesterday. That was beautiful. And Gabby is on her game. Kia Nurse is hitting plenty of 3-point shots.
Megan, I have a question about girl things for you.
Sure. Yeah. Lay it on me.
All right. There was a point in the first half of the game the other day when the hair tie that Lou was wearing came out.
Yeah.
And she played like two more possessions before a whistle when she was able to fix it. In that time, her hair stayed back perfectly. Right. Is that a thing that happens?
Sure.
Or is she just a winter?
No, it's because you've been sweating.
Okay.
Your hair is full of sweat and it acts basically as a hair point. Plus, when you've had your hair up in a ponytail for any extended period of time, it just kind of hangs out there.
Okay, because she did not need to fix that. And like she was perfectly fine, and I thought it was amazing. And it's just another thing that this team is great at.
It's just like you need it in like out of your way entirely, just all of it out of your way, because everything works better in your life and your hair is up.
I really learned something today. Thank you.
This is a true fact of women.
We got a mailbag question once that we declined to answer because it was a stupid question about if they could win just playing in socks, and I feel like maybe this is just them sort of taking a. Like, they're just going to sacrifice one part of their game. Like, oh, we're going to play without hair elastics, and we'll win by 80. Like, next time we'll be like, we're going to wear our shoes on the wrong feet.
Let's actually talk about this. Can they win in socks?
It'd be tricky, but I bet they could. I bet they'd figure it out. Like, Nafisa would just start, like, sliding across the floor at the end.
Oh, they would totally figure out the sliding thing, I'm sure.
Yeah.
They could be Ashland in just socks. I don't think they can
They could be shit-ass USF in just socks.
Oh, yeah.
USF is god-awful.
USF.
And they're supposed to be good. And they're an embarrassment to the game.
That is correct. Everything you said is correct. Can I tell you, obviously, you know, Megan and I think, are firmly on record as the world's biggest Gabby Williams fans.
It's true.
She's all right.
I think Crystal Dangerfield might be my person on this team.
Oh, you!
I love Crystal.
Dead to me. No, just kidding. She looks great. She looks really, really good.
Maybe it's just because I still harbor resentment at how the Mississippi State game ended, but I'm like really happy to have a dominant point guard back on the roster.
She's a hell of a passer, man.
So fast.
Do I still have to watch Natalie Butler this year?
You do not.
You do not.
No.
You get to watch Azri Stevens instead, which is a massive upgrade.
Azri is quite fun, and Megan Walker looked awesome. She had a dope block outlet pass to Stevens situation, all of which was very nice.
Walker had 14 and 5.
She looked great.
Sunday.
Yeah.
Azri Stevens in the first two in the two exhibitions, she had 16 and 11 with four blocks last on Sunday, and then the game before against Fort Hays State, which is absolutely made up. She had
but their men's team, I think, played Kansas. I think I saw that the other day.
She had 15, 7, and 4 in that first game. She's really, really good. It is wild, though, that, like, they were really close to an undefeated season last year. And then they took, like, the two weakest parts of their roster and upgraded them into All-American-level talent.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened.
Pretty insane.
And then, like,
they still have one who hasn't played yet, who's hurt.
Yeah,
I mean, and, like, some of the freshmen, too, are quite good. You know what's weird about this team is there's still two open scholarships on this team. Like, how weird is that? This feels like the longest bench Gino's had in, like, half a decade.
Yeah.
And yet, there's still, like, a couple of scholarships they're not even using at all, plus, like, a couple they're, like, really not using. And they're still going to be deep as hell for a UConn team.
I was saying, who's, like, the third point guard, you think? Like, if, I don't know. Yeah, right?
I mean, Gabby.
That's my only
concern. I am firmly
on
record that Gabby can play literally any position. It doesn't matter. She can do all of the things.
It's great that your only concern is you don't know who the third point guard is.
Well, only because I'm...
Actually, no, it's really... It's Espinosa Hunter. It's Espinosa Hunter.
Is it? Okay.
No, she doesn't look bad.
No, she looks good, too. Right.
Yeah.
That's my thing. I love Kia Nurse. She's, like, a supremely underrated scorer.
She shot 46% from three last year.
A supremely underrated human.
She can be a point guard like 30 games out of the year. I do not want her to be a point guard against Mississippi State. That's how you end up with Sanai Chong on the floor because you desperately need ball handling. And that's how you end up with Sanai Chong launching a Roscoe Smith shot to lose the game.
You know what kills me about that, though, is that UConn would have never been in that position if we all did the right thing and just voted to kick Mississippi out of the United States.
It's a
like we should have years ago.
It's a mistake. Yeah.
True. Yeah.
They're going to win all the games, guys. They're going to win all of them this year.
They're not going to lose, and they're not going to lose for several years.
It's going to be dope as hell. And it's going to be fun again to just like, we got some good home games this year. They're playing Maryland at home this year. They're playing Notre Dame at home this year. It's going to be a really, really fun season, and we should all go and watch as many of these games as possible because it is beautiful, beautiful basketball.
Get the fun in before conference play starts.
Mm-hmm.
They outdrew the men on Sunday.
They're opening
by about
their
2000.
Season on Sunday against Stanford, but they're playing them in Ohio. And I got to be honest, I'm not crazy about that because Ohio is the worst state in the union. Nothing good has ever come out of
Ohio. We just mentioned Mississippi.
Yeah, we just talked about Mississippi.
My ex-boyfriend's loan to Ohio to the trash bin. Hate Ohio. Anyway.
I mean, if we're being honest, 35 of the states are just absolute bullshit.
We shouldn't keep most of them. Like, all of the ones in the middle, like, we don't need any of those.
No.
Wait, can we do a fantasy draft of states?
Right now?
That sounds like a lot of fun. Meacham, did you hear someone at the door?
Oh, Jack, you must have better hearing than I do.
Is this the next film in the Scream series?
I was actually trying to help him lead into David Benedict Cumberbatch, but that's okay.
It can be both.
Hello, my fellow ladies and gentlemen.
Wow, David Wait, what? Benedict Cumberbatch.
Are you both a lady and a gentleman?
It's the duality of man.
How many of those beers did you have, Meacham?
Do you mean David or Meacham?
How many pints, David? David, I have a question about the J. Timothy's menu, J. Timothy's Tavern in Plainville, Connecticut.
Of course. I love J. Timothy's.
Is there anywhere on the menu where you can buy the Civil Conflict Trophy?
You know, we are working on it, and only bring it out during this most special week of all, Civil Conflict Week, as we say in my home county of Yorkshire. I'm perfectly willing to put it up for, you know, the pound to euro exchange rate is just off the rails right now.
Off the rails, that famous British idiom.
We invented railroads. Don't look that up.
Did you, though?
No. Nope.
I like to think that people are learning when I come on the podcast.
All right, David, tell us about what we could get at J. Timothy's.
It's a dish near and dear to my heart, fish and chips. It reminds me of Mum back in Yorkshire. Fresh scrod fillet, lightly breaded and served with French fries. We call them English fries, English chips, rather, with coleslaw and tartar sauce for just $19.95. Reminds me of my days at Oxford when I was studying to become an athletic director.
Somehow you've incorporated wistful looks into the act, which is just above and beyond considering there's no video.
Sometimes the moment just overtakes you.
David, what is your relationship with J. Timothy's Tavern?
When I came to America on the Queen Elizabeth II, of course, it's the only boat that British people are allowed on. I landed in Connecticut, and the first place was J. Timothy's Tavern, and they took people in with open arms, and ever since I've been indebted to them.
All right. Well, David, thank you, and look forward to you putting this civil conflict trophy up for sale.
It's always a pleasure, and we hope you buy this, and we hope you also buy football tickets.
Cheerio.
Should we do an Instaback?
Yeah, we got like a lot of actual questions that...
Yeah, because Tyler said he would answer all of them.
I'm going to. I will do it on my own if I have to.
Do you realize how stupid our followers are?
I do.
We have really dumb readers.
No one is more aware than me because I also get the ones that are emailed to us, which are just special.
Wait. Should we?
You want to just do that one? That's going to take too long.
Yeah, let's do that one. I really want to do that one.
All right. What if we just...
Let's see if we could do this from memory.
Okay.
This is a terrible idea, and it's going to be terrible.
No, this is the worst idea we've ever had. Do this.
This is going to be stupid. I just want to read the question so that we can humiliate this person.
I hope he listens. He doesn't know what a podcast is.
Oh, shit. I have to find it. I erased the email because it was stupid.
I mean, I could tell you what it was.
No, here it is. It's from Bob. Bob via email says, who... in parentheses, in chronological order, end parentheses, were the assistant coaches for Gino, Jim Calhoun, and Kevin Ollie. I like how they've turned it from, like, we want your insight and opinion to just, like, please Google this for me. Either that or this is a testament.
Trivia questions.
This is, like, a testament to how awful UConn's media guys are.
How about I just say assistant coaches until you stop me?
What's one of the... actual bad questions that we got? What's a real one?
We should get Puneet on the podcast to answer that last question.
I don't want to step on. So a lot of these questions we're answering in our roundtable pieces, which will probably be up before this podcast is up. So I don't want to step on those too much.
Will it though?
Yes. Let's answer this question from Kyle Fitz, who's at Kyle A. Fitz, who says, who's the transfer or decommitted prospect that you would most want on this year's men's team?
Fitzy, this question's a downer, man.
Why?
Now I gotta think about transfers.
I gotta say, it was disheartening watching Mekhi Ashton Langford.
He was disgustingly good. I still say that.
Not
it doesn't really count,
Enoch?
But I'd say
he transferred to Louisville.
If he plays 1 minute for Louisville, I will be so upset.
It doesn't even matter. He transferred to that fucking mess. He thought he was going to play for Patino.
I will burn down every Papa John's in this country if he plays for them.
Russ outing himself as Antifa.
Yeah.
So far, they're basically got nothing, right? Louisville basically got nothing for actually using prostitutes.
I mean, they had their postseason ban, but that was bullshit.
They lost their Hall of Fame coach. Seems like kind of a big deal.
Well, that wasn't for prostitutes.
That wasn't over the hookers.
Oh, prostitutes, right.
That was overpaying the college.
Oh, yeah, nobody cares about
it. It goes to show you could either run a whorehouse out of your university or you could pay recruits, but you can't do both.
Listen, hookers are fine. Fake classes, also fine. Paying college students, not fine.
Yes. Compensating and people for their labor, you just get the fuck out.
And violating rules ex post facto, unforgivable.
Unforgivable. Anyways, I would do Vance too, I think.
I don't know if it really counts, but I'd really like to have senior Daniel Hamilton on this team.
I don't think it counts, but that would be helpful.
Yeah, I mean, to say MAL, because watching that Providence game, you're like, oh, damn, this kid can play. But yeah, I do also think Vance, in all seriousness, because we had him, and it was like, oh.
Speaking of people who could have been at UConn, I will Venmo anyone in this chat right now $1 if you could tell me where Prince Ali currently plays.
He left UCLA?
Yeah.
I thought he ended up going back.
No, he's still at UCLA.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Oh, so
hit me
question.
That Venmo.
God damn it, Russ.
I had no idea he was at UCLA until I just looked it up right now.
Oh.
See, I thought you were insinuating that he had transferred, but you're full of shit.
I am full of shit.
And you're drunk.
Nah.
No. Russ. So, do we want to talk about football?
Yeah, speaking of things you have to be drunk to enjoy.
Should we talk about field hockey instead?
Yo, undefeated Big East champs.
6 years in a row. UConn-Liberty, that famous Big East matchup we all know and love.
You'll notice a conspicuous absence of Georgetown in that.
Patrick Ewing also coaches the field hockey team, so it's not great.
He needs the extra income to cover his debt at the strip club.
This is interesting, though, because, like, I have trouble with, like, talking about the field. First of all, I've never watched the field hockey team ever play anything ever.
Bard Mom and I went to a game early this year, so I now understand field hockey.
Okay.
It's actually pretty fun to watch.
I'm getting to a larger point here, and that's that I'm very proud of the University of Connecticut whenever anybody does something good. And when I hear things like field hockey is undefeated, I'm like, fuck yeah, awesome, field hockey. And then, like, when George Springer wins the World Series and wins World Series MVP, I'm like, fuck yeah, awesome, UConn. But it doesn't feel the same as when, like, Ray Allen hits a game-tying three to send it to overtime in the NBA Finals. And it feels weird to take, like, ownership for me over things that I never watched when I was at the university and things I don't currently watch now.
Bro, it's like the Olympics. UConn's your home country. When they do something good, you get to claim it.
Mm-hmm. Is it that easy?
Yes. Yeah. And I say this as someone who has absolutely no shame in taking ownership of all of the things you just mentioned. Like, ever.
Not to mention the only time I ever even watched George Springer play at UConn is when they made it into the tournament and the games were actually like streamed on whatever ESPN or whatever.
Yeah, but I watched it pretty fucking seriously then.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. As soon as there was a trophy on the line, I was like, oh, I am in.
Yeah.
Listen, if it's on Watch ESPN, I will absolutely dive right into that.
And when UConn field hockey is playing for a trophy, I will watch that. And I have no idea how field hockey works.
Here's the thing with field hockey is if you watch for like 20 minutes, it will be very clear to you how the game works.
Well, I mean, I think I get it.
I get the general concept.
The ball thing into the net.
Yeah. And there's like some weird things that happen. Like,
it's like lacrosse, but with umbrellas.
Play stops a ridiculous number of times during a game. And at first you're like, what the fuck? But then it starts to become like, oh, okay. Yeah. Admittedly, I was also sitting next to my mom who played field hockey at UConn and she was able to explain to me like why things were stopping. But shockingly enough, the rules of field hockey have changed since the 1970s. So there were a few things mom had to learn also, which was kind of adorable.
You no longer have to sniff like four lines of Coke before taking the field.
Did they like add the forward pass or something like that?
The 3-point line, actually.
She's like, whoa, they put on masks to do that? That's crazy. You didn't even have shin guards.
It's funny that we prefaced this joke with like, do you want to talk about football? We should just talk about field hockey. And then we actually start talking about field hockey instead of football.
Because it's a much better conversation than football.
They're about to have a perfect season. They've won the national championship, but they've never had a perfect season before. So
I was just going to say, like, if you really do want to talk about football, I mean, like, from a macro perspective, obviously I haven't been in on this season's football podcasts for one reason or another. But none of this is unexpected. I mean, most of your preseason predictions were 3 or 4 wins and with an improved looking offense and a shit defense. And like, you know,
we didn't expect a shit defense.
Yeah. That's the surprise. I think
we didn't think that would be this bad.
Yeah. I don't think we thought our secondary would not actually play in any of the games at all.
I mean, the secondary was awful last season too.
And I mean, I think we all thought Jamar Summers would not be significantly worse than he was as a sophomore.
Okay, but he's one player. But he's one player in the secondary, and he was in a bad secondary last year that gave up a lot of big plays.
my thing about football is like, yeah, I get it that it seems depressing to talk about, but
I actually don't think it's that depressing to talk about in all seriousness.
Yeah.
Because I feel like, you know, having gone to all of these games, that the thing that, you know, the thing that has stood out the most to me is that, like, yeah, there are obvious holes in here and a lot of the issues that come with having under-recruited for as many years as they have and putting in new schemes. But you actually did see them getting better over the course of the season. Like, you did see them improve. Shears getting concussed in the last game is a bummer because Pindle, I think, is a better athlete than Sheriff's, and I think he's got a better arm, but he cannot read a defense at all, mm-hmm. at all.
Do you guys remember that popular comedy Not Another Teen Movie from the early 2000s?
Yes. Russ, that was before you were born, so I'm not sure how you know how to
But talk. I do remember it. And one of the jokes was there was this football player who kept getting concussed, and like he was going to die after a certain number of concussions, and we put it on the scoreboard. And I feel like we need to do that for Bryant Sheriffs because he has nobody protecting him, and he's probably been concussed 500 times.
Yeah, he shouldn't play any more football now.
He should not. He has a kid.
He has a child. It's time to stop.
Stop playing football. We love
the child born?
Yeah.
Yeah, this child's like actual child now.
Kid's like 8 months old.
Not even really babby.
Yep.
Child's like a recruit now.
Yeah, please go protect your brain now, Bryant Sheriffs.
Yeah.
Meacham, are you depressed about football?
I actually thought this last week, the loss to USF was the most encouraging loss of the season. You know, we've had a lot to choose from. I don't know, the offense played well. They left some points out on the field because they don't have a guy like Flowers. Defense is obviously terrible, but the defense did not play bad for half of that game.
Yeah.
And then they forgot how to tackle in the second half, and it just all went to hell. There's really no answers on the roster right now. I think we're really going to miss Sheriffs, so it might be good kind of see what Pindell's got over these next couple games. It's hard not to understand where Diaco left the program and how depleted it is talent-wise.
I do think you've seen some bright spots from the freshmen. And actually, even like I've liked what I've seen from Quavon Skaines, who's a redshirt freshman who's doing all the kick returns and playing at wide receiver. Like he's really quick. He's good at finding those seams and like getting those extra like 5-8 yards on those kick returns, which has been, it's like, oh, okay, yeah, here's a kid who can play. There's a handful of them. Like there's definitely something that they're building on, but it is, yeah. It's not anything I didn't expect. Like, I don't think anything about the season has been worse than we expected it. If nothing else, it's been the offense has been surprisingly, you know, pleasant to watch. I certainly did not think it would be this much better than it was last year. Should we talk about the fact that Gino has once again graced us with his Twitter presence?
And it's gonna be great until Cap makes him delete it. Yeah,
I am extremely here for woke Gino calling people assholes on Twitter.
It will be deleted by the time this podcast goes to air.
Yeah, there's no way this lasts. It's way too good.
Because,
like, he's right about everything.
Yeah.
But it's going to be such a distraction and, like, because already there's an ESPN article about him saying that, like, white guys with rifles or whatever the hell he said about the gun violence. Like, that already happened. And it's been 2 days.
It's not even verified yet. Like, I still have more followers than he does, and it's already being written up.
It's funny because, like, as we're doing this podcast, I'm seeing Steve Kerr's statement on gun violence, which is like, like, treated as a public health issue. Pretty, you know, Popovich had one yesterday that was pretty good.
Popovich wouldn't talk about his game yesterday.
Yeah, that was interesting. I love him. Same.
I feel like,
but it's just so funny. These, like, you know, eloquent, like, poignant statements, and then Gino's just on Twitter, like, yelling at some guy.
I mean, let's be honest, Gino can do whatever the fuck he wants.
Gino has combined good opinions with, like, being, like, awful dad at Twitter.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful
the best thing
mixture.
Ever.
It's
I love
great.
It.
All right, good whiskey cast, everyone.
Yeah. Good job.
Are we going to have any content out of this?
Yeah.
Just make sure none of it's from me.
Okay. Done. That's my normal goal.
All right, good.
Thanks for listening to the Dimebat Podcast. Until next time, see you later.